Welcome to the Smart Tech Check podcast, hosted by Mark Vina, your home for candid, insightful, and provocative conversations about the smart home, home automation, security, smartphones, PC and console gaming, and much more.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mark Vina, host of the Smart Tech Check podcast. Today is Friday, June 21st, 2024. Joining me for today's podcast are Stuart Walpin, who scribes for Popular Mechanics, AARP, Techlicious, Investopedia, and other fine publications. Rob Peguero, who writes about tech developments at PC Mag, Fast Company, and other publications. And John Quain, who writes for the New York Times, Smart Cities, and Tom's Guide. Gentlemen, how are you? How's your week going?
Toasty.
Weekend. Toasty,
yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I know what toasty is because for the last 3 weeks, it's, the average temperature out here has been 103, but it's a dry heat.
You have that over me.
No, I, you know, actually, Rob, you know, I've thought about you because, you know, there's a reason why Washington is known as the swamp. And when it does get hot out there, the humidity is must be unbelievable. And I would say the same thing about New York and the Northeast in general.
It's but, 93 degrees right now. What is this humidity? The weather app for iPad doesn't. Well, it feels like 97 with the humidity, 44%. Actually, that's not bad.
That's not bad.
When it's like 90%, you know, you step up and you're instantly like covered in sweat and it doesn't go anywhere.
Well, that's the awful thing is that it could be 85, but it's entirely humid. You know, you got to feel that awful feeling where you got to take a shower as soon as you step outside, you know, which is a perfect description for hanging out with politicians in Washington. Got to take a shower when after you meet them. Anyway, lots for us to catch up on. Let's get right to the topics we want to talk about here. We had WWDC a couple of weeks ago. We did, you know, chat about, we had some prognostications before it. I think a lot of the stuff we talked about actually came to fruition. But let's start, Stuart, let's start with you. Anything that kind of, let's just focus on what surprised you, what stood out to you, what deserves a bit more attention. So let me wheel it over to you.
I'm sorry, you said my name?
Yes, I did.
I'm sorry. Well, what did and did not surprise me, what did surprise me is that we were all pretty spot on with what we thought that they were going to do. What sort of surprised me was the impact that it had once I actually was watching it and managed to absorb most of what was being presented. The fact that Apple was rebranding AI in its own name, where almost everybody else was shouting AI, AI, and Apple was going, no, it's Apple intelligence, no, and we're going to do very, very functional things. The second thing that struck me was how little Tim Cook played a role and how big Greg, and I'm never going to be able to pronounce his last name, played the role that he played.
Craig
Federighi. And there's been this discussion going on for the last few months about who's going to succeed Tim Cook. And it looks more and more like helmet hair.
Because Air Force One.
Yes, Air Force One. Right, exactly right. He played a much bigger role in the proceedings than I was thinking it was going to. Basically, Tim Cook did the intro and the outro, and that was it. So, I mean, just looking beyond the pure product and what AI or Apple intelligence is, this may have been a clue as to who the next leader of Apple may be.
No, that's interesting. I mean, you're reading kind of a bit of the tea leaves in here in terms of succession. It's an important topic. I mean, Tim Cook is still a relatively, and I use the word advisedly, relatively young man. Although he has to, obviously, investors want to know who's, you know, who's on, who's in the,
who's on deck.
On the on-deck circle, exactly. Yeah. So, but from a feature, you know, I really was impressed with the flow of the WWDC this year in terms of they kind of set the stage up, talking about the platform changes. They kind of hinted at the AI piece. Yes, they want to own the branding. What a surprise! Apple does that all over again. In fact, if you didn't operate in the tech industry for the last 2 years and just watch the Apple WWDC, you would almost get the feeling that, oh, Apple is inventing AI, but they love that. You know, that's kind of their modus operandi.
That's what they do.
But what I did like, frankly, and I'll let John kind of chime in on this, is I really like the fact that they see the compelling usage models. They didn't seek out to reinvent the world. Hey, AI is not going to solve world hunger, at least quite yet. But they did focus specifically on this highly personalized, customized experience in a very highly private. They spent a lot of time on privacy, you know, their private cloud capability. It gets a little dicey when you start talking about their engagement with ChatGPT, because they are partnering with them for external searches and external content. And they did wrap around, hey, you know, we're going to have this program in place that really will keep OpenAI honest, for lack of a better phrase. But John, what was your take? I mean, do you agree with me that they're really focusing on the really compelling things that the average user, especially if you're part of the, if you're all in on the Apple ecosystem, can really provide? So I didn't see a lot of, you know, bright, shiny object type of stuff. You agree with that? Hey folks, this is Mark Vina, CEO of Smart Tech Research. Smart Tech Research is proud to have Aura sponsoring my Smart Tech Check podcast. Aura security software is the all-in-one digital safety net for the whole family. It's literally like having a personal cyber guardian that protects all of the devices in your home on a 24/7 basis. What's more, its AI functionality stands out as it constantly learns and adapts to threats, keeping your family and you safe around the clock. It's a must-have solution for anyone serious about online security. Stay tuned for a special no-obligation promo offer for Aura that will give you cybersecurity peace of mind.
Hi, I'm Anna with Smart Tech Research. Whether you're browsing the web, checking emails, monitoring your children's online behavior, spam calls and identity protection, and conducting online transactions, Aura has your back, ensuring a secure and seamless experience every time. Aura's comprehensive security solutions are compatible with Microsoft Windows, Apple Mac OS, Android, iOS, and iPad OS devices. For an exclusive 14-day no-obligation trial version of Aura, use the on-screen QR code or visit the website shown here. Aura is the smart, simple way to stay safe online.
Yeah, I mean, they really was the biggest push for me was Siri will be better. That was kind of the main pitch to us. You know, the privacy thing, but I, you know, most of this I just have with Apple getting involved and with most of these companies, because AI is this very crude, very simplistic thing right now that only does one basic thing and only has one basic technique that it uses. But the two words I have are model collapse. And basically you're starting to see that happen now, where AI is feeding out these stories that are online, and then the AI is going back and learning, quote, in quotation with scare quotes, learning from the very articles that contain the false information already that it created itself. And it sort of starts to eat itself. And you're seeing more of that. I was in Helsinki and we were trying to get directions to something, and it was telling us that museums and places were open that were not open and were obviously closed. And, you know, half of the information was wrong. And seeing Apple jump into it made me think, now I'm going to see maybe that happened faster than it otherwise would have with all those users. I don't know. You know, it may improve maybe some of the voice recognition. So, but, you know, maybe, but that'll take a long time to do that. So, and the privacy thing will be interesting to see how they manage that, because.
But I wouldn't undercut the privacy stuff, because the reason why I say that, I mean, one common theme is that they're going to provide the ability to be able to look at whether it's a document, some content that you're looking at in Safari, but especially that portion where, let's say I have a text message thread with my entire family, and it's about something relatively important. Let's say we're discussing a medical condition, you know, and I want to get a summary of that 100 messages that went back and forth with my family. Well, let's face it, I don't care how great the tool is, but do you really want that information compromised? You know, whether, you know, even at a certainly companies have that concern when discussing roadmap topics or other business related topics. You don't want that information compromised. So, you know, with consumers, the first time that there's a compromise where, guess what? Hey, there's a summary report and someone was able to get a hack of that, you know, and be able to disclose a lot of private information. So I think they did assuming they can execute on this. I thought, I think that's pretty important, John.
Yeah, but your information is out there. I mean, it's in all these other social media, even though Apple has tried to maintain this sort of ecosystem, it doesn't. There's the internet, there's blogs, there's posts, your stuff is out there. And the more you generate, the more it's out there. You can't really shut it down. It's nice, I grant you, that if I want to search on my system, am I going to use, do I trust Copilot? Absolutely not. You know, all my tax information and stuff. No, I do not trust Copilot, to keep that separate. Right. Yeah, so that is definitely an essential thing. And in that sense, yes, that's really important. And we're going to come to it in a minute, but you know, that also plays into it. Yeah, if they can do it.
Yeah, and I want Rob to chime in on this. I mean, let's face it. I mean, we keep talking about ChatGPT and OpenAI and all the derivative tools that have been based on that. I saw a study a couple of days ago that only 7% of the population is using ChatGPT. So the usage is way disproportionate to the reality. You know, not every person is using these type of tools.
Right.
And I think Apple's conclusion is that, well, maybe there's some distrust. And I think that probably is not an unfair characterization to make. Right. And to really drive, you know, massive usage, especially with private information, you know, whether it's text messages or documents or things that you really don't want to see compromised, they have to win people over, win mainstream consumers over. And I think Apple probably has the best shot at doing that, given their reputation. Do you agree with that, Rob?
So when I looked at all the stuff they introduced in the whole Apple intelligence bucket, I thought the ChatGPT integration was the least interesting part. I do want to see what they can do with that whole concept of, you know, what you mentioned. I don't need AI to write for me. I don't need it to create funny pictures for me either. But if it can look through my overloaded inbox and tell me, you know, I want to be able to do a search like, summarize all the meeting requests I have for day one of CES.
Yeah.
Summarize all the evening invitations. So, you know, tell me which days I definitely don't have to worry about paying for dinner. That's actually useful. Looking at a defined bucket of data and making sense out of it in a way that a plain old search doesn't. A lot of the other stuff out there, and certainly the generative aspect of it, seems less useful. And so, yeah, I want to see what Apple can do, because they're addressing a problem I actually have. Like, I write for a living. I don't need AI to write for me. I'm vain enough to think.
Rob, let me correct you. I've read some of your stuff. You need all the help you can get. I'm kidding. You're a great writer.
But, you know, we're glossing over the real headline news, which is that they're going to add a calculator app to the iPad.
I was going to bring that up. And by the way, let's face, as crazy as that seems, especially with the with a Apple Pencil, there's some cool stuff that they showed off. I mean, I really was very impressed with the way they'll be able to integrate. Hey, you just jot a bunch of numbers down, and it will make your handwriting better. I thought that I can't wait to play with that.
Catching up to the Newton message pad.
30 years later.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So anyway, let me give you 30 seconds, Stuart, on any other things you want to make a comment about relative to WWDC.
Well, I can't wait to try it. It always is frustrating, you know, that they hold this event in June and they get you all excited about everything. And remembering, of course, that this is a developers conference. This is not a consumer introductory event, but we still have to wait 5 months before we actually are going to get our hands on it.
Right. Although, John, you know, crazy people like myself will probably, they generally will release all this stuff in early September.
Right.
I'll start downloading stuff on my production hardware, which I'm not supposed to do, probably in August, because once they get to that third or fourth, fifth beta, famous last words, it should be rock solid. But I've been burned on that a couple of times.
Yeah.
So, John, any other comments you want to make before we hit the next one, after we speak to Rob?
No, I mean, the you're just going to see more of this AI push. And but, you know, I think your idea of, you know, your comment about trust and will more, you know, the average consumer become more interested in it is a good point to make. And yeah, it's not the danger of this stuff isn't that only 7% of the people are using it. The danger is it's out there crawling everything right now. That's the the problem. And that's why lawsuits from employers of mine are, you know, and all this stuff is going on. So it'll be interesting to see once the fall rolls around how much it really becomes a part of Syria and these other aspects.
Rob, your closing thoughts?
Yeah, let me look over my WWDC notes.
I don't like to announce a lot.
Other than the fact that Rob, we know that Apple Intelligence will not make you a better writer.
That may be worse. Who knows? You know, interesting to see that they're still just sort of chipping away, finding little ways to iterate at things like privacy and usability. One thing we didn't mention before is the whole idea of having, you know, individual apps that are locked in their own private space, which lines up pretty closely with a feature coming to Android 15 as well. So you see the sort of convergent evolution continuing to go on between Apple and Google, in this case, to the benefit of users, which I can't necessarily say for both companies rushing to put stuff AI into everything.
Right. Well, it can be interesting. So I don't know when you guys are going to start downloading, but I hope you don't wait until September, you know, because most people don't realize this. You can actually get the betas for free. You don't have to be a developer, but it's a pretty loosely defined phrase.
I'll wait for the first update.
I'm going to wait actually to the third or fourth update. I get a little nervous. I can't be burned again. Here's a pretty provocative question. You know, this was a big week in the PC space as Qualcomm finally saw some really great traction with early in the week. They had a launch October 18th with a big launch of all their new Snapdragon X Elite laptops. They've gotten tremendous traction with Dell, HP, Lenovo. I went to Best Buy on Tuesday, and they're really Qualcomm and Best Buy and the big retailers spending a lot of money with this push these really AI-enabled chips, these Snapdragon X Elite chips, which are showing tremendous promise in terms of competing with Apple Silicon. Better battery life, better performance, 45 performance, which is extremely high performing without compromising battery life. And this is a bit of hyperbole, I know, but God knows the PC space needs a major adrenaline jolt. And I really think, especially with Copilot Plus, even though John doesn't trust Copilot, there are a lot of really interesting applications that will take advantage of this new horsepower that's being delivered by Qualcomm. And again, you know, you've got AMD, you've got Intel, really the two chief antagonists over there that are working on comparable offerings that they are bringing to market. But this whole notion of ARM-based Windows, you know, with a very robust version of Windows 11, and that's probably the other part of the conversation, it seems very well positioned to make this a thing, you know, to really drive some adrenaline. So let me start with Rob this time. Rob, do you really think this is going to be a big deal? I mean,
I think it is good that Intel has some competition and that x86 is not the only architecture, and that we know things have come around when Google, which remember, almost immediately had a version of Chrome for Apple Silicon, finally shipped one for the ARM architecture that Qualcomm uses. You know, I personally, the Copilot Plus thing, that doesn't do a whole lot for me. But yeah, better battery life. Who has ever complained that, oh, this laptop had lasts too long between charges? I can't deal with that. Laptops that run, you know, cooler, don't need a cooling fan at all. That's a great thing as well. I just want to see, you know, a better selection of hardware. Like last I checked, there were not any of these Snapdragon X Elite based laptops that had the convertible design where you can flip the screen all around, use it as a tablet. And you'd think something that is, you know, optimized to run very efficiently on the most portable devices would show up in that kind of design as well.
Yeah, I think you'll see that coming in the summer. I won't go into details how I know that, but I think you.
Yeah, no. I mean, Qualcomm has been trying to make this happen for a long time. And I remember reviewing a Lenovo ThinkPad with the non-Snapdragon X Elite, the previous version of it. And you could see that there was a lot of stuff that still had to be done. You know, apps that had not been rewritten for ARM, which had a real cost in battery life that I observed, compatibility issues. And, you know, in general, it's just not delivering a huge advance. Now it seems like we're getting there. And yeah, I think this is good.
Well, John, Rob just brought up the big topic on this, and that is around, will people, especially enterprise customers, consumers are can make switches fairly quickly, but I would even put consumers in this bucket. The ARM version of Windows 11 up until recently has been kind of a science project. It had compatibility issues. If you're an IT manager, certainly we're not going to recommend ARM-based Windows notebooks because there are too many compromises have to be made.
Right.
What I see, they've made a lot of progress. I mean, I've spoken privately to Dell and to Microsoft and especially the big OEMs, Lenovo, HP, and they do. And now, obviously, they cannot put their enterprise business at risk over a science project version of Windows ARM. And it looks like they're making some progress. So I think that's a big part of the equation. But, you know, and I think Qualcomm knows that.
It's a huge opportunity for Qualcomm. I mean, they have been like maybe 10 years pitching us about, well, we want to be in cars. You know, we want to be in the head unit of every car. We're not just a smartphone company and, system on a chip. We're going to do that. We're going to do it in PCs. We'd love to be in PCs. My reaction usually was, yeah, whatever. Come on, you know. But here they are. And I think it's an excellent opportunity for them to get into PCs. Definitely huge, huge, huge. And as you say, it's now, would I order 1,000 of them for my enterprise? Well, I'm not sure yet. We'll see how it goes, you know, probably not this year. And I think the other thing about this is they need a killer app, and AI doesn't have a killer app. I hate to say it, but I mean, you can do pictures and images that are kind of cool if you're just doing some graphics and put out a few words and get them to spit something back. But there's nothing there yet that's really compelling me.
I will tell you, John, there's an app that, and I don't know if there's a Windows version. I'm pretty sure there is. It's an app called Fathom, F-A-T-H-O-M.
Right.
And it's just not a note taker. I mean, those are a dime a dozen. You know, they do a transcript of your call.
Right.
This app uses AI, and my understanding is, it works with, you can embed it in Zoom, Teams, WebEx. It creates and I kid you not, I've used it 5 or 6 times now. It will create a Word document summary of the meeting, and it uses AI to parse out like kind of the chit chat that happens at the beginning of every conference call.
Right.
I don't know how it does that, but it analyzes the call. And I guess if you're talking about silly stuff like the Yankees or baseball or whatever, that's not part of the summary. But when you get a chance, if you know, download this Fathom. It's free. I'm not sure what their business model is yet, but you know, who knows? But it's pretty cool. It's pretty compelling, especially if you're using it with Zoom. But I agree with you, Stu, and I'm sure Stuart will agree with this as well. You know, killer apps are going to drive why you want to buy a notebook with AI stuff in it from an experience standpoint.
Well, just let me follow up for a second before Stuart says. So I just was using Otter AI for something, right? Awful, awful, awful. So the trouble with that is, here's the problem. It's not as good as Dragon Naturally Speaking was 20 years ago. Right. It had a transcript of the file, but it actually had the principal person we were interviewing. It got her name wrong, even though we named the file her name. Right. And then the second sentence that I wanted to get a quote from, because that's what a transcript is for, to get the actual exact quote, misinterpreted what she said. You know, so I was like, yeah, it might be, you know, 99% accurate, but that's actually really terrible. So it's not, again, you know, if you don't need to have accurate information, sure, why not play around with it? But when you actually you're doing your work and you're actually having to use it, that's kind of the issue. It's like,
my guess is after you've played with this, since you are you folks are interviewing people all the time.
Yeah.
Most of the time online, my assumption, like I do, having a transcript, that's great. And the transcript has to be accurate. But the meeting summary thing is really blow away type of stuff. But anyway, that's, I'm sure knowing you guys, you'll download right after you get off the call. Stuart, what's your closing thoughts on this topic?
Well, I will preface this with a caveat in that I am not a PC person. So I have an Acer laptop. Thank you, Acer, for when I have to dive into this territory. But generally, I'm not on a PC. But just from some random thoughts, one, some of the early reviews that I've read say that it's very strong on battery life, as you mentioned, which I think is going to be a very big deal moving forward and a challenge for the other chip makers, as well as very good with AI. But apparently, it's lacking a little on the graphics side. So two points on that. One, it's been said that NVIDIA is going to be producing a complementary GPU that will make up for what the X Elite is falling short on the graphics side. And number two, this is version 1.0 of this platform, so I think there's probably a lot of room to grow here. On a larger sense, I was curious about the branding. Because when a consumer goes into a store and sees a laptop that has a Snapdragon chip in it, the first thing they're going to think of is that it's going to be about as powerful as a smartphone. So right. I was really curious that Qualcomm kept the Snapdragon branding, since that's so closely associated with smartphones, and didn't come up with a new branding or just call it X Elite without the Snapdragon, so people don't look at it as a smartphone chip in a laptop. And so whether or not that will be able, I mean, on the enterprise side, obviously everybody's going to wait till version 2.0 or 1.5 or whatever. But on the consumer side, you may get some leery eyes and questions at the retail level going, why would I want a laptop that has a smartphone chip in it? So I think their branding need. I was a little surprised about that they kept the Snapdragon branding. I know it has a great deal of brand value, but not for laptops.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a good point. We just saw some Lenovo laptops that are coming out, and actually looked really good. Lenovo does great hardware. The Yoga Slim 7X, it had like a 14.5 inch OLED screen. Awesome, looks great. So to your point, Stuart, yeah, is it going to say Copilot, Windows 11 Copilot is the big brand, and Snapdragon in really small type on the sticker? I don't know what they're going to do. That's a good point.
Well, I will be curious to see once you get your hands on some of these notebooks, which I'm sure you will at some point. I think you're going to be impressed. I've played with one particular model that I won't tell you who the brand was, and I would just really very, very impressed. And another company is sending me one, and I may end up doing a review on that publicly. But I'm just very, very impressed with the technology. And the branding observation is an interesting one.
I'm actually going to bet you will see the Snapdragon brand much more evident on PCs than on phones. Because when's the last time did Samsung advertise a new phone with it has the Snapdragon chip in it? Because it doesn't mean anything. They all have that. There's a difference between what kind of Snapdragon chip, which normal people shouldn't care about, but on a PC, if you see Snapdragon, you should, if these companies do anything right here, you should know that this should mean serious change in power efficiency and battery life compared to what you've seen before from Intel and AMD.
Well, and I'll fairness to Qualcomm, because I've spoken to them about this exact topic. They're going to be spending quite a bit of bucks on this. They're not going to go quietly into that good night. They know they've got to put some marketing dollars behind this. Let's talk about this next topic, Stuart. You know, you're the one who raised it.
Well, it's really, really curious to me that this is such a bipartisan subject. You're coming from the Surgeon General wants to put a warning on it, and you had New York last week, the governor of New York signing a bill that there had to be that they couldn't use algorithms for anybody under a certain age, and Florida passed a very similar bill. So when you have Florida and New York sort of agreeing that social media, the way that it is out there, is bad, and the fact that we've heard all of these rumblings in Congress about doing something about big tech, and both sides complaining about social media, both the right and the left. I don't know what's going to happen, but once you get New York and there's talks about it in California, it's sort of like the book business. For instance, in the school book textbook business, if one or in the car business, if one or two big states decide they're going to do something, almost everybody has to follow. And if you've got New York, Florida, and California all telling the social media companies you have to do something, Congress may not have to be involved. They might have to just fix what we perceive is wrong, or what they perceive is wrong, without any congressional action. But the fact that this is bipartisan, that there is an increasing recognition of the harm that social media is having, at least to kids, I think that you're going to start to see a lot more movement moving forward, at least politically. Whether or not the companies end up doing anything, I think they're going to have to be pushed into it the way, say, the video game industry was forced to put ratings on unless they didn't want Congress to step in, you know, the ESRB, you know, and all of that. I think that they're going to be pushed into doing something self-regulatory to sort of stop the more extreme kind of legislation that a lot of people are proposing.
But John, here's the interesting thing. People are making the comparison to what the Surgeon General did in the mid-60s with cigarettes, which, right, by the way, was successful. If you look at cigarette usage, it's declined dramatically, you know, in 40 years. So mission accomplished there. But the difference is, and I think this is probably what Stuart's hinting at, is that cigarette usage, they were able to control distribution, meaning that you had to be you know, in most states at a certain age to use cigarettes, retailers or, you know, stores couldn't sell cigarettes to minors. Of course, you know, I mean, they, and by the way, they also apply to, I have to scan. You guys will probably know the answer, whether they're not able to sell cigarettes in vending machines anymore, because of course vending machines can't be controlled. But that's kind of the big difference, is that,
right,
at the end of the day, and first of all, kids, when they see labels like this, that means I want more social media, because they think it's harmful for me. I don't care. You know, I'm 15 and I could give a rat's patootie. So, John, talk about the practical implementation of this.
Well, I think it's a good thing to do in general. You know, I think it is to have a warning label on there. And I think it's warranted in this case. I mean, even though for some of my family members, social media has been a terrifically wonderful thing. It is, you know, it can be kind of a lifesaver for some people. It really can. It can also have the reverse effect, as we well know. And those are the cases that often get publicized to get the most coverage, unfortunately, and there are horrific things that happen because of it. But, you know, the smoking case is a good example. So cigarettes aren't bad for everyone, right? It only about 27% of people who smoke at the top end, like smoked a lot, who ever get cancer. So it's not like, oh, it kills every person who has a cigarette. The same goes for social media. Look, it's not always bad for every single person who goes on, but it deserves a warning label, no question about it. And you have companies that are purposely manipulating it and experimenting with it. So I bring you to Facebook, you know, giving us particular feeds to see what happens if we do more negative or positive ones, or other people. They do those tests all the time. The dating app that put people on purpose on dates with people that they would be their opposite. Instead of people that fit all their criteria, they sent people out on dates on their opposite to see what happened. And since there are no guardrails in the United States, yeah, probably a bad thing. And yes, I think putting a warning label is a good start. I know it sounds like a lawyer joke is coming. It's not coming, but having the warning label would be a good start. And, you know, a lot of parents feel helpless too. And they're like, we could use anything here. So I think it's going to gain a lot of traction.
So Rob, just to kind of close us on this issue, do you think that we might see a radical implementation of this capability where, for example, government orders all devices must have some type of hardware filter, yeah, like biometric sensor, that, hey, I have to prove that I'm 18 or above to use Facebook.
We've already had this. This was ACLU versus Janet Reno, where almost the entirety of the Communications Decency Act was struck down because you cannot limit right. communication to people over a certain age. It suppresses speech. It will not survive First Amendment scrutiny. The comparison to cigarettes I was going to bring up is, as we said, cigarettes are bad for everyone. They're also not good for anyone. There are no positive health effects of smoking. And social media.
It's fun.
And it was fun. Let me snap you.
Did you ever see a Marlboro Red from 1965? Believe me, if you smoke, it made you sexier.
The Camel Ad. So a report that came out last year, a majority of adolescents report that social media helps them feel more accepted, 58%, like they have people who can support them through tough times, 67%, like they have a place to show their creative side, 71%, and more connected to what's going on in their friends' lives, 80%. This report was published by the Surgeon General on the HHS.gov site last year. And it says there can be positive aspects to it and negative aspects. More research is needed. So from the Surgeon General's own work, I don't think the case is made that social media is so dangerous that it requires a government warning label. Another fun parallel somebody noticed, we all should remember the time Everett Koop suggested video games were bad for kids and I think called out Pac-Man in particular.
Oh, it destroyed people.
Well, you could go back to the 50s and the comic book scare.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Rock and roll. Even jazz in the 1920s.
Right. But it is true, though, that, look, we have warning labels on cigarettes, even though only a small percentage gets sick from it. And we have warning labels on raw food, even though a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage ever gets sick from that. This is more endemic. I think there is a very strong case for putting those labels on that. And they involve so many more people, and it has such a negative effect. Even if it's 15%, that's a huge number. So, and it's clearly more than that. So in terms of mental health and stuff, I think the evidence is in, and you got to start somewhere. So I think it's they're not going to get a reg, as you well know in Washington. We're not going to get any kind of other serious regulation.
I think the mere threat will prompt the industry to even if they're only surface things, to try to make it look as if they're playing along.
Yeah, safe bet.
Well,
yeah, I don't know.
I want to hit the next topic. We're definitely going to talk about this again, but I just don't know how effective this is because if it has no.
I have to go get a cigarette.
Yeah,
exactly what I was thinking. Yeah.
So, hey, Rob, this is the topic you wanted to chat about. You kind of kicked this off, but please tell the audience who Frank McCourt is. And this
billionaire investor Frank McCourt made his money when Major League Baseball forced him to sell the Los Angeles Dodgers, and he made out quite well. And so he has since been casting, like all billionaire investors, needs to have a project of one kind or another. And he's been working on this very sort of somewhat vague bid to reinvent social media and the internet at large on a decentralized, privacy optimized, data sovereign, digital democracy kind of foundation. And it has sort of instantiated itself in what he's calling his people's bid to buy TikTok. And he gave a talk at the Collision Conference last week where I did moderate a few panels in Toronto. Sorry, last week, this week. It's been a long week. And it's interesting. So there was a lot of hand-wavy stuff in it, but to sort of boil it down, he's as a group developing what's called the Distributed Social Networking Protocol, which is not too different from something like Mastodon and Blue Sky, except there's a blockchain angle to it. And the idea is not only would you sort of control your core data, everything would be written to a blockchain so it couldn't be centralized. My thought was that's going to be really resource intensive and how's that going to scale? I have my doubts. The other thing he glossed over is where's he going to get the money? His net worth, I think Forbes puts it at $1.4 billion. That's not enough to buy TikTok. The interesting part, though, he's saying we don't want or need the TikTok algorithm. Their whole idea is we just need the 170 million Americans that are on TikTok right now. We can move it onto this new basis. Somehow it'll remain as fun, amusing, annoying, whatever as it is now without the recommendation algorithm. And he's saying people will like that because they'll own their data. They will not feel put upon, which I don't know if TikTokers actually feel put upon by the app. And reaction, it's been funny to see, first of all, the reaction from Dodger fans, many of whom see his ownership of the team the way New Yorkers of a certain age think of, like, Walter O'Malley. It's not, they don't see him as a potential savior of TikTok or really anything else.
Right.
And will ByteDance even want to sell? Like I've said before, if the company not only refuses to sell TikTok, but then shuts it down rather than take a huge check from somebody, that would be kind of a self-indicting move.
So, John, I guess the question I have for John Quinn, because John, I know you're a big TikTok influencer. You a lot of cat videos, which is, I've always kind of questioned. And I know you're big fans of billionaires buying social media companies.
Oh, yeah.
You know, give me your perspective on this. I'm dying to ask you.
Well, the idea that McCourt's talking about, and Rob did a great job summarizing, is a really interesting one. There are a lot of programmers out there that are keen about this too. And that an ancillary thing is your data would be lift. I could pull out my Facebook stuff and plug it into like the next social media thing that I liked, or put it into Blue Sky from Twitter into Blue Sky, and it would just be portable too as another component of it. I think it's a great idea. I don't know, for exactly the reasons that Rob just laid out, why, whether it's feasible or not, or, you know, practical that somebody would do this. I'm not sure I really care about saving TikTok, I'll be honest, because every time an influencer goes, well, I'm doing a business on this, like, so move to Blue Sky, you know, so it wouldn't be not a big lift, not a big ask. So maybe Frank McCord wants to buy Twitter or something, but I'm not sure. Just get that as well.
I knew you were going to bring up Twitter. I knew you. That's the kind of guy you are. Stuart, close us out on this. What's your take?
Well, the first thought I have is a pure capitalist one. I can't figure out where the money is here, which is going to restrict investors from coming in. How exactly do you make money on this if everything is portable and there isn't necessarily one platform that you can focus on? So I haven't quite figured out the business model, as you mentioned with Fathom. I'm not sure where the capitalist drive to invest in this, in McCourt's bid to buy TikTok. I'm not sure where that is. The other part of this is a user acceptance piece of this. In all new technologies, the key to consumer uptake of any new technology or device is it more convenient than what I did before? And what is being suggested here, at least what I'm hearing is being suggested, is much more of a DIY social media approach, which is decidedly not easier than simply tuning onto TikTok and watching videos or making and posting videos. If I now have to think about what sites I'm on, what information am I porting over, what data do I own and what data don't I own, all of a sudden you're putting in at least some roadblocks to consumer acceptance, consumers who are used to just signing onto a platform and floating. So I think the idea on a pure intellectual basis, on the way that the internet ought to work is a good idea. I just think that so many of the paradigms for the consumers and for investors are so set that it will be very, very difficult to shake them on either side, on the capitalist side or the usability side, or even the simply understanding what is this new thing.
Right. I honestly, I'm not even sure I have an opinion on this particular topic.
I mean, ignorant slut.
Which is unusual because I have an opinion about everything. I do have an opinion on why the Dodgers moved to Los Angeles, you know, and maybe about Walter Mallory being Mr. persona non grata in Brooklyn. But I'm going to close this one out because I just don't really have a solid view on this. But I do appreciate, Rob, you taking the topic up. Guys, thanks for all the time we have today. Thanks for being so generous with all of your time, and I appreciate you guys calling in. For our listening audience, thanks for making the Smart Tech Check podcast part of your day or commute. Please make sure that you hit the on-screen QR code to subscribe – to subscribe to my Smart Tech YouTube channel and follow me at X at Mark Vina Tech Guy. Guys, thanks again for your time.
Thank you.
Take care.